When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to episode 33 of the Rex Chapman Show with my super dope homeboy from the L-Town, Josh Hopkins.
I like that. From the L-Town. Yep,
from the L-Town.
Lexville.
What's up, Josh?
What's happening, Rex? You've just got back from London, didn't you?
Been traveling a little bit.
Cheerio,
Governor. A little bit.
How was
it? Hello. It was great. Had a good, really good time. Can't tell you what I was there for though.
Sneaky.
No, it's really just my new hangout. I just pop over for a bit, pop back, you know, that's what I do.
So your buddy, Big Ben.
Yeah. And the Parliament.
Oh, little kids. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Big Ben. Well, welcome back, man. You're in Brooklyn.
I'm in Brooklyn. I've come back. We got trade deadline coming up. Episode 33, the Patrick Ewing episode. We don't have Patrick, but he was number 33.
Larry Bird.
Decent player.
All right.
We got Ron Mercer, our guy from Kentucky.
Nice pull right there. Kareem.
Yeah. And my favorite. One of my favorite football players that I should think of more. Whoops, my chair just gave. Remember there was a guy that played at Pitt back in the day. His name was Tony Dorsett, but he got to the league and it was Tony Dorsett. Right. He was 33.
Dorsett Award, right?
Uh-huh.
They wanted to be like the Dorsett, like the Heisman for.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Number 33.
Oh, Shaq was 33. He was on a good friend of ours, guy on our show.
Kareem.
Well, yeah, that's the man. Kareem.
Yeah.
And Shaq, that's strong. And
Lonzo Mourning. Lonzo Mourning. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But a lot of basketball going on. It sure looks like the Lakers are struggling. You know, I feel bad right now for Russell Westbrook. And here's why. Russ is just what he is. And he's just always been a competitive, high energy kind of guy. When I watch him play right now, just as a fan, somebody that's been around the game, I watch a little bit of what happened with Allen Iverson at the end of his career. You can just tell, you know, yes, there are times that he can elevate and play over the top of you still. But on this team, it's just a mismatch. He has to have the ball to be effective. He has to. Doesn't know how to move without it. He's never had to. LeBron has to have the ball. I mean, you have to have the ball in LeBron's hands. And they're wildly different. But LeBron's more effective at this stage with the ball. AD needs the ball. So they're just, I think they're kind of they're struggling obviously, but I hate it for him, for Russ, because, you know, people are looking at him sideways. It's his hometown out there in Los Angeles and he's going through a tough time. He'll handle it. I know. And, you know, he doesn't care if anybody feels bad for him. I just hate that, you know, they're lumping this stuff on him.
Yeah. Also, you hate too, because the guy who's been a walking triple double, I don't want him to be remembered for this years. You know, they remember you the last part, you know, and he's just such a dynamic athlete. Like one of those guys you'd be like, boy, he could play a lot of sports. You know, he's just just quick and so tenacious. And he's still got some basketball in him. It's just
a terrible match. I think so too.
The other moves that you thought were interesting at all. So well, they're still till, well,
I was interested to learn that the Blazers traded CJ McCollum. Love CJ, but it was time to split those guys up, Damian and CJ. You know, Utah or Portland made a few other moves. They get Joe Ingles, who's hurt, who won't play this year. I wonder if he might just, and he's up, his deal's up at the end of the year. I wonder if he might just go back to Utah. So I don't know what that was really about. I'm not sure that and then the Bucks ended up moving Dante DiVincenzo, who I really like. Mm-hmm. The Kings, and the Kings also got Domantas Sabonis, who I think that helps them.
I read that and he was like 25-year-old. I was like, he's just 25?
All-star. But, you know, he's their kind of rebuilding. And, you know, he's been in a couple of places. And, you know, he's a terrific player. I think it made sense, though, you know, especially if Indiana's going in a different direction.
Yeah, he could have gone to a team and put him over the top. Instead, he's part of a rebuild, you know?
Yeah, true.
And maybe if they're rebuilding right and they're doing it, but I'm like, want Fox out of there because, you know, he's our guy. And
I know
that's the place just careers go to. No, I haven't seen the King on TV ever. Like, it's a tumbleweeds blow through that place if you're out there. And I just wanted him, I don't know, somewhere more prime time, but if they're doing it, good.
Breaking news, NBA. The Brooklyn Nets have traded one of their star players to the Philadelphia 76ers. The Sixers are sending Ben Simmons and Seth Curry to the Nets for James Harden. And somehow looks like Andre Drummond's going to end up with the Nets. That's big news, buddy. Big news.
That's bigger than big.
I don't hate it. I don't love it for the Sixers. But I think pairing a real point guard, Ben Simmons, all he wants to do is pass, with Kyrie Irving at the two, essentially, Kevin Durant, maybe the greatest scorer ever, and Andre Drummond, who they need another backup to LaMarcus Aldridge. They're right back in the swing of things if KD gets healthy. That's huge.
And a just knockdown shooter that you can't Seth Curry, look at that. I mean,
no, he's statistically, he's a better shooter than his brother right now.
Right. Yeah. They didn't have to give up Maxie.
No. I guess there's a couple of picks involved, but big news today, buddy.
So you think the Nets got a significantly better? You are losing.
It didn't seem to fit real well with KD and James, but let's be sure and get this straight. Yes, you are trading James Harden, one of the greatest offensive players in the league, for maybe the best defensive player in the league.
Yeah.
Can guard every position.
And has plenty of offense.
Has plenty of offense. You got Patty Mills and Seth Curry, snipers. Patty Mills leading the league in makes this year in threes. So now you've got snipers on the floor. You've got KD and James. And now defensively, you just got significantly better because James is off the floor. Now Ben Simmons hasn't played basketball in a long time, but he's young. He's young. You would imagine he probably can go right now, but I like it for the Nets, man. I really do.
Rounding him with, like you said, just the two of the best scorers ever.
Imagine him on the floor. Imagine him on the floor. Simmons, Kyrie, KD, Patty Mills, and Seth Curry. KD can play the five for hits. Ben can play the five defensively for hits. That's terrifying. terrifying lineup.
That is. This is fun. Tell me, what do the Sixers look like now?
I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, he'll make them better because, hey, you give somebody – all of a sudden, Joel just got – his world just changed offensively because no matter what – and James will get back, I'm sure, to being himself. But you give him a lot more freedom now. Now, you know, they've got a man and a half guarding James that was guarding Ben before – or Joel before.
Right.
So – anyway, did you read anything this week?
Actually, I didn't. It's been a tough week. So, yeah, I didn't. What about you?
I traveled. I had a lot of time on the plane, caught up on sleep. Caught up on my sleep. So, I didn't.
Sleep is so important.
It is. It is. I actually, it's funny we should talk about this. I read a book in my sleep. I was dreaming about reading a book, and I don't remember what book it was. So, I haven't read anything this week.
Sleep
either.
Is fundamental. Don't forget that. Yeah. Well, that's been book club.
Football centric this week, week of the Super Bowl. And guess who we have, Josh? Let's get right to him. You want to?
I sure would. I'm like, I'm like a little scared, a little puffy that's happy.
Well, guess what? We have our homeboy, Timothy Scott Couch. Tim Couch.
What have I done to deserve this?
Former number one overall pick in the NFL draft, five-year NFL veteran quarterback, SEC player of the year, and from our home state of Kentucky, welcome Timothy Scott Couch.
Yes.
What's up, guys? Man, it's great to be on with you guys, man. It's good to see you. I haven't seen you both in a while, so it's good to be on and catch up a little bit.
So nice of you to do this. I just got to say, I just got to talk to 25 years ago me, okay? Bro. Josh, you make a lot of mistakes. Things don't go kind of the way you a lot of times, but whatever you've done, you made some right choice because right now you're on this thing called a podcast. I'll explain later. I still don't get it. Wait till you hear about NFTs. You'll never understand. Not a problem. The thing is you are on a podcast with Rex Chapman and Tim Couch right now. That is the epicenter, the big blue mountaintop. So, and all you cat fans out there, don't be mad at me. I understand. Live through me. This is the greatest moment of any cat fan's life, and I'm here channeling it for you. Thank both of you.
Insane.
Unbelievable. Can't believe this.
We're on with the guy from Quantico.
And
Cougar Town. Perfect storm.
Yeah. Okay. It's embarrassing. Okay. Guys, two Kentucky legends here. Tim, man, thank you for doing this. Rex, thank you for letting me do this. Tim, where are you right now? You're in Lexington?
Yeah, I'm in Lexington. Yeah, I just moved last week, man. I sold my house that I've been living in for about 15 years. And so it's been a nightmare, man. Moved, got boxes stacked up to the ceiling, trying to unpack and get settled in. But it's cool, man. I'm really enjoying my new place and just trying to make it feel like home and get all this construction done and get unpacked a little bit. But it's been great. So, but yeah, I'm in Lexington, man, based here. My kids are in school here. My kids go to Lexington Christian Academy. So I'm here pretty much year round at this point with my kids' schedules. It's kind of hard for me to get out of town as much as I used to, but yeah, we're here, man.
That's great. That's great. I love it when the Kentucky guys stay in Kentucky. You know what I'm talking about?
Absolutely.
Guys, let me just ask, cause this is a question I like to ask for you super athletes. Tim, when was the first time you were like, wow, I'm better than everyone at everything? Like, what age were you? You were like, Mom, how come I beat everyone at everything? Like, when did you realize you were special athletically?
You know, I think I probably realized it early on. But, you know, where I grew up in a very small town in East Kentucky. And I knew that, you know, I was better than the kids that I was playing against. But I thought it was probably just the thing that, you know, the competition probably wasn't, you know, that great as it would be, you know, in the major cities and in other states and things like that. But, you know, as I continue to get older and I continue to stay bigger than everyone else and stronger than everyone else and And I just continued to, you know, each level I went to, whether it be grade school, high school, college, whatever, you know, I just kind of always was, you know, just a little bit ahead. But, you know, I think probably for me, when I realized it, when I started going to camps, you know, probably eighth grade, freshman year, you know, things like that, competing against kids from across the country and kind of seeing where I stacked up. And I was winning, you know, MVPs of all these football camps I would go to, these basketball camps I would go to. So at that point, I probably started, you know, feeling more confident that it wasn't just, you know, a local, you know, good for where you're from kind of thing. And it was kind of the thing that, you know, I could probably, you know, pursue and try to make, you know, live out a dream with and just, you know, just try to take it as far as I could. So that's probably when it hit me the first time.
Great.
And when was the first time you were, I want to get into it some more. You were a hell of a basketball player. I mean, like 3,000 points in high school. I was decent and I had like 2,300 points in high school.
You're decent.
I mean, well, but I'm saying that's, you scored 3,000 effing points in high school in basketball. I'm interested to know, when was the first time you realized that your arm was significantly better than, like, you know, all of your classmates or the teams that went, when did that happen? And then on top of that, when did you realize, all right, it's football and not basketball?
Yeah. You know, that's a good question. You know, I think, you know, as far as the arm thing goes, it was really early. You know, I remember,
was it?
And you know, kids were just barely able to hold on to the ball and I had massive hands, you know, and I was just out there gripping the ball and being able to throw it all over the field. And I just, You know, as a kid, you just play with your buddies. You don't really think good at this or anything. You're just trying to go out and have fun with your buddies. But, you know, I started realizing at an early age, I mean, I can throw this thing further and harder than the kids around me.
At a certain age, I remember getting to, you know, if I went to a camp, for instance, you know, I knew once we did the layup line, that gave me a lot of confidence. You know, right. I could go in there and dunk it in.
Jump over.
Yes. Did you kind of work that way with your arm?
Yeah, I think so. You know, it just every level I played at, you know, it was, you know, that I was always quarterback, never played another position. It was just natural to me. And, you know, I just felt really confident from day one. You know, I started playing in about third grade. And I remember being under center, just like, I got this. You know, this is where I'm supposed to be. You know,
third grade, so you're like, I feel at home.
I just felt, you know, it never felt uncomfortable to me. Basketball, you know, as far as that goes, Rex, for that question, I really didn't know until I got to college, you know, and honestly, Rex was my inspiration, you know, growing up. And you know, he was everyone's hero growing up. I think I was probably 10, 11 years old or so when Rex was at UK. So he was an idol to me. And, you know, I wanted to grow up and be Rex Chapman. You know, every kid in Kentucky wanted to be, you know, a basketball player. I didn't really consider myself a football player. I was a basketball player and I was going to be the next Rex Chapman. And, you know, that was my goal. And then I got to college and, you know, I came to UK to play both sports and, you know, Rick and Tubby were there and actually went over and practiced with the guys a couple of days after football season. And I realized pretty quickly that I wasn't going to be able to play football and roll in over there like it was no big deal and play basketball right. with Jim Shepard and Ron Mercer and Derek Anderson and Tony Delk and all those guys. I'm like, man, these guys are phenomenal. So, you know, that's when I decided to walk away and figured that that football is going to be my ticket.
The Rex Chapman Show is sponsored by TicketSmarter. TicketSmarter helps customers from all walks of life experience the power and excitement of live events by giving back through children's charities and creating helpful partnerships. $1 from every transaction will help our charitable partners, including St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital, the V Foundation, Quarterback and Children's Health Foundation, and Coach to Cure MD. TicketSmarter is the official ticket resale partner of PBR, NJCAA, and over 35 collegiate conferences with 250 plus universities, including the Pac-12. While I'm here in Brooklyn, I could catch a Nets game or any of the concerts coming to the Barclays Center. Buying with TicketSmarter is quick, easy, and 100% guaranteed tickets. Find tickets to more than 125,000 concerts, sports, and theater events. Order now. Do you remember when we met for the first time?
I sure do. Absolutely. Yeah.
Where?
It was at your house. They brought me over. I was a senior in high school, and they knew I was a big Rex Chapman fan. And they're like, well, one of my relatives lived across the street from you over there.
This would have been like 98?
96, I think.
Okay, 96. I'd have been playing in Phoenix probably.
You're home for the off season, I think. Yeah. And they're like, well, Rex just lives across the street from us, and we can probably arrange something if you want to meet him. I'm like, heck yeah, I want to meet him, man. So yeah, I remember coming over there, man. I was just like, you know, a little kid from East Kentucky and meeting my idol, man. I was just like in awe.
It was amazing. I still remember. I remember them bringing you by, and I think you still hadn't decided yet where you were going to go to school. So they were kind of recruiting, and I had, of course, been keeping up with you for a few years and knew that, you know, it was a big recruiting, you know, sort of weekend for you. And I was going to lay it on thick, man. We needed you.
You didn't have to say much, man. I was sold at that point, I think.
Hey, what were your early memories, you know, growing up, going to Rupp Arena with your dad, and at the Sweet 16, you know, what was that like for you?
Man, it was awesome. Every year I used to go to the Sweet 16 with my dad. And I remember going to, you know, watching Richie Farmer play against Allen Houston in those games. And man, they were just phenomenal. It was something I looked forward to every year. It was a trip I took with my dad every single year. Never missed one. And just remember, you know, just that bond you get with your dad, you know, going to the games and, you know, just the whole tournament, the whole weekend is just a blast. And just seeing all those great players and, you know, it was a lot of fun. And, you know, just remember going to the UK games and, you know, watching you play, watching Sam Bowie play, watching, you know, all those great players that we had, you know, back then, and just sitting there, man, just dreaming about, you know, one of these days I want to be one of those guys. I want to play for UK. I want to, you know, I want to make a difference at my home state school, you know, like some of these guys that stayed home and made a big impact. And I want to be one of those guys. And, you know, so certainly watching you guys and that group, that era of UK players, and in football, you know, as well. We used to go to football games as well. So, you know, those type of people really inspired me at a young age to want to, you know, be a Kentucky Wildcat and stay home and play for my in-state school.
How hard of a I mean, that had to be a really hard choice. I mean, you're the man nationally. You know, you were the golden boy, and Kentucky wasn't.
Which made it easy for me. Kentucky's the best in basketball, you know?
Very different. Certainly wasn't known for football then. We're on the come up now, but we're certainly not known for football now. How difficult was it for you to make that decision? Because you had the biggest Notre Dames and everyone knocking at your door. How difficult was it to go to Kentucky, that decision?
It was extremely difficult. You know, even though I wanted to go to Kentucky, you know, like you said, you know, I was National Player of the Year. In Gatorade, USA Today, Sports Illustrated, you know, across the board, I could have went anywhere I wanted, number one recruit in the country. And, you know, I'm getting all these offers from, you know, Alabama, Penn State, Ohio State, Florida, Tennessee, everywhere. And, you know, my dad is like, nope, hell no, we're going to Kentucky. And I'm like, Dad, are you sure? Like, you know, they won one game last year. They were 1-10. And, you know, and I could go anywhere in the country. You want me to go play for the worst team in America? Well, like, why are we doing this? They run the option. I don't run the option, obviously. So I'm like, are we really doing? So it caused a pretty big, you know, a little bit of an argument, a big argument with my dad. We got, you know, I'm like, hey, it's my decision. I should be able to choose where I want to go. And once, you know, I decided, actually committed to Tennessee. Coach Fulmer and Coach Cutcliffe were in my living room, and you know, Peyton was there. I was a couple years behind him. And they're like, oh, you know, you'll come in, redshirt your first year, take over when Peyton leaves. It's like perfect situation. And I'm like, you know, I'm in 100%. You know, where I grew up closer to Knoxville than I did. You know, it was, I used to go down there all the time to watch games and stuff. I grew up in, you know, oddly enough, I was a Tennessee football and Kentucky basketball fan because you couldn't watch Kentucky football back then. It was brutal. It was bad. I committed to Tennessee, and my dad, in the middle of the meeting, gets up and leaves. And I hear and I'm sitting here with Fulmer and Cutcliffe, and they're coaching Peyton Manning, and they've got a great program going, and I'm committing to them. My dad gets up and leaves. I hear him fire his old red truck up outside. And Fulmer looks at me like, what the hell's going on? You know, should we wait on him to come back before we, you know, make this official? I'm like, Coach, he ain't coming back anytime soon. Like, he is not coming back. So we sat there in awkward silence, man, for a while. And I'm finally like, you know, I'll talk to him. You know, we'll get it straightened out. So when he came back, he was furious, man. He's like, you are not going to Tennessee. You are going to Kentucky. And then I actually moved out of house for a couple of days and stayed with my buddy. And I finally came back. I'm like, hey, if it means this much to you for me to go to Kentucky and play football for the worst program in America, like, all right, let's do it. I said, I'm going to give it 1 year, though. If it doesn't go well, I'm transferring to wherever I want to go.
That's an incredible story. And it didn't go well.
It went horrible. And halfway through the season, I had my brother call Coach Fulmer and say, hey, this is not going well. We're coming down at the end of the season. And he was like, perfect. Come on down, transfer in. You have to sit out a year, you know, do all that. And then they fired Bill Curry right after that. And C.M. Newton, the athletic director at the time, came to me and said, hey, listen, if you'll just go through this process with us before you transfer, you know, we're going to find a coach to really suit your skills. So I'm like, I'll go through the process with you, sure. So he comes back a couple of days later and says, we got the guy. I'm like, who is it? He goes, Hal Mumming. I'm like, I have never heard of Hal Mumming. No idea who this guy is. He's coaching at Valdosta State, you know, Division II, I think it was. Mike Leach is his offensive coordinator. Never heard of Mike Leach. Never heard of these guys. And then they show up on campus, and Hal calls me over at first meeting. He looks at me and goes, you're the starting quarterback, and we're going to throw the ball 50 times a game. How's that sound? I go, I'm in, coach. Shit, that's all I need to hear. Like, I just ran the option all last year. You're going to throw the ball 50 times a game? Like, yes, let's do it.
Yeah, you have got the number one recruit all over the board, the golden arm, golden boy, and they stayed with the option. I mean, that's it. It looked like, it was a terrible decision to go to Kentucky.
It was terrible. I remember getting to the point where, you know, a couple of games into the season, I'm like, man, I don't know if I can play at this level. You know, they just had me, I was in such, you know, the wrong system for me. You know, we had, you know, the coaching wasn't good. And I'm just like, man, I don't know if I can make it at this level. And then, you know, the very next year, we were ranked last in the nation in offense that year in points and yardage and everything like that. And then the very next season, my sophomore year with new coaching staff of Mumming and Leach, we're ranked number one in America in passing and scoring. We're lighting it up, man. The same players, just in a different system that's, you know, putting guys in position to succeed, you know, and that's what it's all about as a coach. It's not like, you know, we're going to run my system. I don't care what talent I have around me. I think as a coach, you know, you got to look at the talent around you and say, listen, this may be my system, but these guys can't run this. I'm going to adjust to the players around me. And, you know, I think that's what Coach Mumming did so well. As he came in and he saw, you know, Craig Yeast on the field. He saw Anthony White. He saw all these talented players that were just, you know, just kind of bottled up with the system that we were in. And, you know, he came in and we spread the field and put five wide receivers out there. And, you know, back then really no one was doing that kind of stuff. So we caught so many people by storm, and that's why we were able to beat Alabama for the first time in 75 years. We beat LSU on the road. You know, we were winning all these games that we shouldn't have been winning. And I think a lot of it was because, you know, we were just so different at the time than what everyone else was doing. So we were able to catch a lot of people off guard, I think.
How amazing is it, though? You literally, it was a terrible decision to go to Kentucky.
It was.
Time. Yes. Your dad, God bless him. But things, you know, whether God, the universe, kismet. And 1 year later, things align to where you are in the best place you could possibly be. You're right. With the minds that changed football to where it is today.
Yeah.
Those were the guys that made the spread what it is. And suddenly you were with them, you know, just throwing darts.
Yeah. I mean,
it's amazing that can happen. And in the span of a year, you were at the worst place you could be, and then you were at the best place you could be. So it all worked out. Thank you to your father.
Elmer, right?
Elmer, yes.
Yes. Elmer. And Rex, you had a similar coaching change that changed your mind to come to Kentucky, right?
Yeah. My grandparents were really good friends with Joe B. Hall. I had committed to Louisville like after my junior year. That was my dream school. And so I just wasn't a fan of how slow Kentucky had started playing at that time. Denny ran up and down the floor. Darryl Griffith was my favorite player, all that stuff. But then Joe B resigned and Eddie Sutton came in, who Eddie had a history of playing up and down at Arkansas. And so I ended up going there. Yeah, but very weird. Just, I'm with you, Tim, that, and what people don't understand, whether, you know, and I was not like, I would have said at the time, everybody loved Kentucky. I probably liked Louisville because less people liked Louisville. And but still at the time growing up, I'd be like, forget Kentucky. Who cares? When they came knocking, though,
right,
kind of go, wait a second. Yes. Yeah. You mean they want me? Right. And then you go, you know, and as a Kentucky kid, that just means something, right?
It does, man. Absolutely, it does. Yeah, it's just a special thing. You know, you grew up watching it, and, you know, it's just, you know, wearing that Kentucky on your chest when you run out of the tunnel means something to you as a Kentucky kid. You know, it's deeper than, you know, you're playing for more than yourself. You know, your family grew up in the state. Everybody in your family is a Kentucky fan. Everybody's coming to the games, you know, those kind of things. It just means a lot to Kentucky kids to be able to wear that uniform. And I think it always will.
I think you make a great point, you know, because think about it. I still to this day, let me ask you this. Do you know one Kentucky kid who had or parents had season tickets to Kentucky games who ended up growing up and going to Kentucky? I don't know anybody. The only person I know that may have had Scott Padgett. Scott Padgett's parents, I think, had some tickets. They lived in Louisville. But other than that, I don't know anybody. And so you're down there, we take into consideration, look, I'm down here. Most of my teammates are from New York and Georgia and everywhere else. We're Kentucky kids, and it does feel different.
It definitely does. Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah. Hey, you were Kentucky. You were Mr. Football, and weren't you supposed to be Mr. Basketball and hurt your ankle or something?
Yeah, well, I was averaging 37 points a game my junior year. I mean, I was lighting it up. Yeah, I was averaging 37 a game. So it got to the point where the other guard on our team broke his hand, and then my coach looks at me about halfway through the season. He goes, you can't shoot the ball enough. I'm like, that's all you need to tell me. And then I ran off games where I had 61, 57, 59, 54. Like, all these are just back to back to back to back. So my scoring average just shot up. I ended up averaging, you know, 37 a game for that junior season. And, yeah, it was crazy. And actually, I finished runner-up that year to Damian Fishback. Ended up winning. He went to Auburn. But, you know, I think, you know, I was leading the state in scoring and stuff. Probably, I don't know if they just didn't want to give it to me because I just won Mr. Football or whatever. But, you know, certainly it was in consideration. Then my senior year, I did hurt my ankle, Rex. I was averaging like 26, 27 a game my senior year. And I'd already committed to UK to play football, and I hurt my ankle. And I'm like, I just kind of was on cruise control at that point, you know. So
you were all behind that at that point. We're like, hey, easy, fella.
I'm like, I don't want to go into college with a bum ankle here. So I'm just going
to when you were going through the process with the schools, did Rick Pitino talk to you at all about coming to UK?
He basically told me that, you know, you can come to UK and you play football, scholarship at football, you walk on the basketball team. So I was like, okay, you know, that's perfect. You know, that sounds good to me, because all the other schools I was considering, when I told them I wanted to play basketball, they were like, you are absolutely crazy. This is a football school. You're not coming to Alabama or Florida or Tennessee or Ohio State. You're not playing basketball. You're a quarterback. You know, you're not playing. So Kentucky was the only one that was actually saying, you come here, you can play both sports. Absolutely. Whatever you want to do.
They were lying. You play field hockey. You could do whatever you want. It doesn't. Can you imagine you with the NIL now? Both of you wouldn't have to go pro. You just
really, Rex and I would have to take a pay cut to go pro. NIL around there, man. That would have been fun.
Were you now? You were nominated. You were a Heisman. Did you go to New York?
I did. Yeah.
What was that like?
It was insane. You know, I'd never been to New York.
Leslie County to New York City right there.
Yeah, man, we didn't have enough money to travel anywhere. So growing up, so first time I'm in New York is for the Heisman Trophy ceremony. And, you know, we're just kind of in awe, my family and I, looking around and, you know, just taking in the city and everything. And then we're at the, you know, the downtown athletic club for the Heisman ceremony. And, you know, it was just, it was surreal, man, to take all that in. And then, you know, obviously, whatever it was, a month or two, 3 months later, I'm in New York for the NFL draft at Madison Square Garden. So, it was a whirlwind, man. You know, I graduated high school in 96, and then all of a sudden in 1999, I'm the number one pick in the draft. Three short years later, you know, I felt like I, you know, it went by, you know, so fast that, you know, I was still just a, you know, just a really young kid, you know, just kind of being pulled in a million different directions. And, you know, but it was all, I had good people around me, thankfully, that were kind of, you know, guiding me and those kind of things. So this is just overwhelming. You know, Rex knows how it is to, you know, be a young kid like that and, you know, being a top pick in the draft and, you know, you're getting pulled, you know, this direction, that direction, people telling you should do this, do that, invest in this, put your money here, don't do that, don't do this. You know, it's so much stuff coming at you. All you want to do is play ball. You know, that's all I cared about. Like, I just want to play ball and I don't want to do any of this other stuff, but you know, it's just part of it. And, you know, as a young kid, you don't realize that, but you kind of have to grow into that role of, you know, this is a business now kind of thing. And, you know, it's not just ball anymore. It's a different level. But it was all surreal, man. Just that whole experience being there in New York and, you know, being with the other guys. Ricky Williams ended up winning it my year. He had broke the all-time rushing record and,
right.
And those kind of things. But it was a lot of fun, man. We had a great group there. It was a ton of fun.
I was telling Rex before we went on, I think I had something to do with your Heisman push because I was at a steakhouse here in LA and Jim Rome was there and I sent him a drink with his wife or girlfriend or whatever and said it was from the Tim Couch Heisman Committee. And so I think that might have been a little bit of the push. You know, he was super nice. He came over and thanked me. He said, Tim could win it. Yeah, yes. And so you're welcome is all I wanted to say.
Yeah, I appreciate all the help you can get when it comes to something like that.
Sure. Go ahead.
Tim, was Mike Leach as weird as he appears today back when he was your offensive coordinator at UK?
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. I remember when he first got to UK and he's coming in and he's talking about all this shit. Like, we're like, dude, what are you talking about? Like, he's talking about all these, like, you know, historical, like, wars and pirates and, like, everything but football. You know, and you're like, who is this dude, man? Like, what's he talking about? You know, but it was just, you know, and we didn't know who he was. You know, he was just like a little weird dude rolling into campus. We didn't know he was going to go be Mike Leach. You know, he'd never called plays before or anything like that, you know, 20-some years ago. So it was just, you know, it was phenomenal, man, being there with those guys. Like Josh had mentioned earlier, like on the cutting edge of offensive football that's still around today, and it's now spread into the NFL. You know, you got guys like Cliff Kingsbury, the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. He's an air raid guy. All these quarterbacks that played in that system, Baker Mayfield, Patrick Mahomes, Jared Goff. You know, tons of guys that are having success that played in that system into the NFL now. And, you know, we started that thing in 1997. I can remember my quarterback coach, Chris Hatcher, when he first got to campus. I was so eager to learn the playbook and get a head start on things. I call him up. I'm like, hey, man, I'm coming over to the office. I want you to give me a playbook. I want to get started before these meetings get going. I want to kind of get an idea of what the system looks like. He goes, well, dude, you know, he said, we don't really have a playbook. I'm like, we don't have a play. And I came from Curry's system. We had a playbook.
Yeah.
So I'm like, we don't have a playbook. He goes, I'll tell you what, meet me over at Hooters. Let's grab some lunch. I go, all right. So we go to Hooters. Rex, I am not kidding. He starts taking out napkins at Hooters, drawing up the system on Hooters napkins. And that's how I learned the air raid offense.
Wow.
I was like,
I love it more now.
Wow.
And it just spread, you know, and then, you know, we took off with it in 97 and 98. And then all of a sudden, every team in the country started coming to UK, getting, you know, in the offseason, learning our system and learning what we were doing. And they implemented it in their programs, and it's still around today, man. I think, you know, probably most people run some version of the air raid offense. So it's amazing how that thing started and, you know, how quickly it took off and how much, you know, longevity it's had.
Tim Couch learned the air raid at Hooters.
Hooters.
There's your list right there.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Do you have a favorite memory, a favorite game, a favorite play at Kentucky?
Yeah, there's many. You know, I think my favorite one would probably be the Alabama game. You know, just because, you know, Kentucky's not supposed to beat Alabama. They hadn't beaten them in 75 years. Still haven't beaten them. You know, now it'd be 95 years, 96, 97 years they haven't beaten Alabama. That's the only time that Kentucky has won. But, you know, we get to overtime in that game, and we get the ball, it's like a third and eight or something. And we call timeout, come over to the sideline, and Craig East comes over. I'm open. Of course, he's always says he's open. You know, give me the ball. We're just kind of like, shut up, man. You're always saying you're open. So finally, he's like, no, trust me. If we get in this set, this 3-by-1 set, leave me on the backside 1-on-1, I'll beat my guy. I can at least get a first down. I'm like, all right, let's do it. You know, I think he's right, Coach. When we line up 3-by-1, they go single high safety. Safety rolls down. He's 1-on-1 back here. I'll just get him the ball. So we go out. We run the play, and boom, I put it on him. As soon as he comes out of the break, and the guy comes up to tackle him, and Craig slips the tackle, runs into the end zone. And I'm telling you, it was like instant. When this, I saw the ref throw his hands up, the whole stadium was on the field. They're jumping over the walls. They're climbing up on the goalposts, tearing the goalposts down. And you're just like soaking it in, man. And I was like, this is like the moment you live for as a college quarterback. So that's what you – a touchdown pass in overtime to beat Alabama. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that for a college quarterback. So so that would probably be my favorite moment and play that I
– Me too. That was mine.
Me three. My God, I got goosebumps. As a Kentucky former basketball player, I take great pride in the program and going to games, and you're always treated so well by the fans and everything. But, you know, much of Kentucky basketball history was already there. You know, the good had really good history before I got there. You, on the other hand, our program wasn't that good. What does it feel like to kind of be looked like, you know, this is the guy, not only you're a Kentuckian, but you're sort of looked at as the guy that started this whole thing here? Yes. And then what, A, what's that feel like for you? And then B, what's Mark Stoops done for Kentucky that's given them their first, you know, 10-win season in 45 years?
Yeah. You know, I think, you know, going back to my recruiting in high school, you know, I was looking at all these great schools, and it's like you said, Rex, there have been so many great players, historic players at these other programs, and I was just going to be another guy in a long history of good players. And that was one of the selling points that my dad made on Kentucky. He's like, listen, Kentucky hasn't been good since, you know, the 70s when Derek Ramsey and those guys were there. It's been a, you know, they had, you know, they've had a few good players here and there, but it's not a long list of guys. He's like, if you go to Kentucky, you know, you can, you know, rewrite the record books. You can, you know, set this program in a different direction. You can be, you know, the guy that, you know, elevated the program. And that was very intriguing to me, especially at my home state school, because I wanted to make an impact. I wanted to influence some kids in this state like you influenced me, Rex. I wanted them to say, that's what I want to be when I grow up. I want to be number two. I want to be throwing touchdowns at UK and wearing that blue and white. And then, you know, after, you know, we had our success, here comes Jared Lorenza and Andre Woodson and all these guys. And it kind of fell into place. And, you know, Kentucky was, you know, had a lot of years of really good offensive players, you know, in offensive football. And, you know, now getting to your point with Coach Stoops, these guys have just taken the program to a level that I honestly would have bet my life we would never get to. You know, we always had those really good. It was a great year here. And then the next year would tank. And then he's just up and down, up and down. The consistency that we have now in our program with Stoops and, you know, Morrow and those guys, the way they're able to recruit and develop guys and putting guys into the NFL, we've got a ton of guys playing really well at the next level. And, you know, the recruiting just keeps getting better and better and better each year. And, you know, the transfers, the portals, you know, guys are coming to UK. They want to be here. They want to play SEC. They want to be a part of this program. And I think it's just truly phenomenal what he's done. I would have never in a million years guessed that he would have been this successful here and sustain it the way he has. You know, we've had 2 10-win seasons in the last 3 years, and we haven't done that. And we haven't had one in about 40 years, like you said. So, you know, it's been phenomenal. And, you know, it just continues to grow and grow. And just really proud of where he has our program now. I'm proud to, you know, go support those guys and love what they're doing. And it's just been phenomenal to watch.
The Rex Chapman Show, powered by Basketball News, is sponsored by Prize Picks. Prize Picks is the easy way to play daily fantasy. It's daily fantasy simplified. It's just you versus the projected numbers, Josh. You can pick from 2 up to 5 players and an over-under on their projected stats for a single game and win up to 10 times on any entry. Prize Picks is safe and offers fast withdrawals, Josh.
I like the sound of this.
Well, PrizePicks allows mixed sports entries, offering every sport you can think of. Your PrizePicks entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. It's that easy. You can take the over on Ja Morant's points and the under on Anthony Davis's rebounds if you want. You can receive a match on your deposits up to $100 using our exclusive promo code NEWS. That's promo code NEWS for an instant 100% deposit match on up to $100.
So hold on, program code NEWS, N-E-W-S, like the news on TV?
That's promo code NEWS for an instant 100% deposit match on up to $100. Guess what else? PrizePicks has an award-winning, easy-to-use mobile app available in the App Store and Google Play.
What was that like?
Yeah.
The first draft pick. What were the interviews like? Weird questions, tough questions. What was that process? Because that not many people can say they were the number one pick in any sport. But the NFL quarterback, what was that process like?
You know, that's a good question, Josh. I think it was a weird process of you've been built up your whole life in high school and college, and then once the draft process is starting, I'm sure Rex would probably feel the same way. They try to break you down at that point. You know, what's wrong with him? You know, they try to, because they don't want to pay as much money. You know, they're trying to he can't do this, he can't do that. I'm like, and you're sitting in these meetings and they're like telling you what you can't do. And I'm just, and you're just like, you don't want to be cocky, but you're just like,
your agent's telling you, hey, look, don't worry about anything they say. They're just doing this. It's still hurtful to hear.
Oh, it kills me, because you've worked your butt off your whole life to get to a point and you're like, hey, man, you start getting a little defensive. You're like,
yes.
Look, turn on the tape. Watch what I did against Alabama or LSU or Georgia or Florida, the best teams in the country. Go watch the tape. That's all I'll tell you.
What they're doing, it's propaganda. Right. Just like trying to he's got a bad footwork there because they want you. So
right now we can articulate these feelings, but at age 20, you still feel kind of like a kid and you don't know how to act in this room full of adults.
You don't. That's deciding your future. Like these adults are talking to you and you're like, I just want to go play for your team and you're breaking me down here. They started nitpicking the way I grip the ball. And I'm like, I think the way I've gripped it is working pretty well. So they're like, well, you need to change that and this, that, and the other. I'm like, okay. If we can change a grip. I mean, we can change a grip. Okay. It's weird. It's a different feel, but we'll work through it, whatever. So it's little things like that. But, you get through that process and then they kind of start building you back up again once you get through the interview process and the combine and, all the testing they put you through. And then you get on the field and start doing workouts for the teams. You're like, all right, I'll show you what I can do. You want to make this throw, that throw, whatever you want to see in person, here it is. So then you start feeling better and they kind of, everybody kind of starts building you back up. But the draft night for me was, it was a surreal moment I've ever had in my life. You almost like, it's like an out-of-body experience. You're sitting there in the green room and, Rex, I'm sure, you thought you knew you were going to go to the NBA, but you didn't know you were going to be, what were you, like a fifth or sixth pick or something like that? It's like, you just never think you're going to go that high in the draft. You're just like, I just want to get my damn foot in the door. Let me go play somewhere. Like, I want somebody to want me to play for their team. You never think you're going to come in as a high draft pick like that. It's just never enters your mind. So sitting there and I knew I was going to be the number one pick just right before the draft, they had told me. And, but you still don't believe it until you actually hear it, and the commissioner walks out on the stage and he's like, with the first pick in the 1999 draft from the University of Kentucky, and you hear your name called and they hand you the jersey and you're standing out there in Madison Square Garden and there's flash bulbs going off everywhere, man. And there's all the media you can imagine and all these microphones in your face. And you're just like, golly, man, I remember thinking, standing on that stage, I was in high school 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Like this. Crazy. Like I was in Eastern Kentucky at a town of 300 people 3 years ago. And now I'm standing on this stage. It's just amazing how quickly your life changes. And, I remember my family being there and, everyone's crying and the whole deal. So it was an awesome, awesome experience. One I'll never forget.
You said something earlier and that explanation made me remember this. You know, it is. It's a surreal thing. But also, you know, we're Kentucky kids. Had you ever been on a plane before you got to UK?
No.
I mean, yeah. Well, I've been on one plane. And so I think what we should try to illuminate is that, like, I was talking about this the other day, living in New York or Brooklyn at this point. You know, growing up, unless you could drive, like, get there in 3 hours, that's where you went.
Absolutely. Going,
like, even visiting a place like New York or L.A. or Cleveland or anywhere, that was, like, something that you didn't do. So, and, like, wasn't achievable. So for us at some point for a sport that we for sure just started playing just to play, and you didn't, but you don't realize all the hours you're putting in, all that if you get good enough, there are going to be responsibilities that go with all of this shit. Just you being a good player. Now you got to do the media. Now you got to think about, you know, what you say all the time. You know, right. What stuff that stays in the locker room, stuff that doesn't, all these rules that, you know, now you have to abide by because of your job.
That's absolutely true. There's so much that comes along with it. And, you know, guys like, you know, when you were at UK or I was at UK, they put you on such a pedestal. And, you know, like you said, just not really ready for that. You know, a lot of, you know, just don't know how to handle it. And, you know, you do the best you can, you smile and you try to say the right things and treat people the right way, but it can be overwhelming, you know, at times. It can, you know, it's a lot of weight. It's a lot of pressure on someone, you know, especially, you know, Kentucky guys who stay home and they're making an impact. And, you know, I think it's even under more of a microscope, you know, because, you know, it's just, you know, you're a Kentucky kid. You want to do the right thing.
They've known you for so long. Yeah, they've known you.
They watched you play high school ball, you know, some watched play elementary ball, and now you're out there playing for the Cats, and it is a big responsibility. But, you know, you try to do the best you can. You learn from the mistakes because you're damn sure going to make them. You know, yeah, I've made a lot. I'm sure you've made some, and it's just
– absolutely.
You know, you just try to learn from them and do the best you can. You're a young kid, man. You know, you're 18, 19 years old. There's no real handbook for how to be – you know, an elite athlete, and, you know, being 18 years old where you're getting all this, or you feel all this pressure and responsibility and everything, you just kind of learn as you go.
You know, you both have been such great ambassadors, and I can't imagine the pressure. The way I am too, I know Rex is like this, is like, you remember encounters that happen when you're 18 and you don't know how to handle and you're hot shit and everything, that I would, you know, try and go to sleep and I'd be like, why did I do that? What, you know, the things where you're like, you know, you're just like in the shower and you're like, oh shit, when I was 18, I didn't sign. And I know there are those things in your head, but you guys really did as good a job as anyone could ever expect. And people don't understand. I mean, yes, you're both famous everywhere you go, but in Kentucky you're deified, you're Mount Rushmore, both of you. So, and now as you've gotten older, you're both so, and you were great. I didn't, but you're both so gracious and kind, and I see you all the time. People stop pictures, and I know it has to be at some point overwhelming, annoying to your kids and whatnot, but thank you from all fans of Kentucky for being the guys that you are and that you have been and representing us well. And what would you both say to Will Levis and Ty Washington and those kids now? What would you say if you gave them a bit of advice about off the field and court? What would you say to those kids?
Go ahead, Tim.
You know, I think that, you know, if I could tell them anything right now, and just be slow down and try and embrace it, because it all goes by so fast that, you know, you start getting in this whirlwind of, you know, you just, you know, you've got your head down, you're grinding, you're trying to be the best player you can be. And then it just goes by so fast. You need to take a minute to soak it in and enjoy it, because, you know, it doesn't last long. It goes by really, really quickly. You know, so, you know, I would tell them to, you know, just do that, embrace the moment, you know, realize the responsibility that you have and the influence you're having on kids all across the state that are watching these, you know, watching the basketball program, watching the football program every game, and the impact you have on them, and just try to do the right things, you know, try to inspire people, try to be the best person you can be on and off the field, and set an example for you know, what, how to do it the right way would be my advice to them.
Great answer. Yeah. That's great. Rex, what's your not as good answer?
It's really just going to piggyback on Tim's, because I don't have anything original. No, it really is. I remember somebody telling me, I was senior in high school, freshman or so, you know, take it slow and you'll go, take it fast and it won't last. And I promptly left school.
See ya.
But no, the thing that I find with most of the guys that go to UK or any major school and have success as a freshman, that can go out there and have success as a young player, anybody that can do that, for the most part, the sport itself is not going to be the hard part. Right. They've got that. It's the other stuff. It's you know, knowing you sucked in the game against Florida, but you still had 20 points, or you still threw for whatever you threw, and you knew you sucked. And everybody outside of the arena is telling you how great you did, and keeping that in perspective, trusting your coaches and not, you know, the people who are going to tell you you played great when you really didn't. And I think that that's the main thing, because, you know, if you can handle the playing part of it, you're going to do that just fine. It's learning how to, you know, kind of grow up under the microscope is the hard part.
Right. So take it slow and appreciate it, and don't believe the hype.
There you go.
What we're coming with it. Great.
That's right. Hey, Tim, when Cleveland selected you, made you their first pick in the expansion draft, how familiar were you with Cleveland, the Browns history and all of that stuff? Had been a franchise and now they're coming back. Did you know anything about that?
I knew a little bit. You know, I knew about some, you know, great players in the past, the Jim Browns, Otto Grahams. I'd heard about them. And I knew, you know, the more recent history with Vernon Kosar and, you know, those guys, Frank Minifield, you know, Kentucky guy. You know, so they had some great players. I knew about the dog pound and how, you know, rabid their fans were. And I knew that they were a very hungry franchise to get their team back in town, you know, because they had left to become the Baltimore Ravens in 1996. So they'd been out of the league for 3 years, and now we're coming back in 1999 as the new Cleveland Browns. And they're like, all right, we're going to make you the face of this new franchise. You're the first player ever drafted for the Cleveland Browns. And I'm like, all right, let's do this. You know, if you're going to do it, let's go all in. So
Rex was the first Charlotte Hornet ever drafted.
Absolutely. Yes. Cool,
yeah. Yeah. I wasn't really going to say that, but what I wanted, I know how it was for me, because you don't know. I didn't know. Hornets were a brand new team, all of that. And we were getting the shit beat out of it. We got the shit beat out of us. And after going, you know, playing at Kentucky and playing in high school, I hadn't lost games. You know, we don't lose games. It's not like that. And so, but as the top pick, who the face of the franchise, all that stuff, the losing, it comes back on you a lot. And yes. I wonder how, you know, and Tim, you took some, you know, brutal heat and physical abuse, you know, just to your body those first few years. How, and again, quarterback, a lot of the glory all the time, but when you're not winning games, how hard was that for you just as a young person to navigate that whole thing?
Yeah, that was brutal. That was a tough year. You know, because like you said, Rex, in high school and college, you've had nothing but success. That's why you're one of the top picks in the draft. You've obviously just been, you know, just climbing the ladder. And then you get into the league and, you know, you went into a team that didn't even exist. I went to a team that didn't exist. You know, the worst teams in the league, right? You know, number one pick in the draft, you're going to the worst team. And, you know, we're just like you guys were getting beat to death. I mean, we started out the season maybe 0-6 or something before we won our first game. You know, we were in a lot of games, just couldn't find a way to win. But the sacks just kept piling up. You know, I remember I set the NFL record that year. I got sacked 56 times.
Congratulations.
Well done.
One that I wasn't happy of having. But, you know, that was more of a, you know, just to try to show how tough you are, you know, just keep getting up.
Yeah.
You know, just I'm like, if you're going to earn their respect, you know, they know you're getting the shit beat out of me, but if you keep standing up, say, I'm here for the next play, let's go. You know, over time, they just feel like this guy's, you know, he's either crazy or, you know, he's tough as hell or he's too stupid to know he's hurt, which I don't know which one it is, but, you know, you just keep playing the game. But about halfway through that season, it got to the point where I was like, man, this is overwhelming, you know, because you're the number one pick in the draft and people are expecting you to be Troy Aikman, John Elway, Peyton Manning, all these number one picks that came before you. And, you know, and they're like, you know, why is he not playing at that level? You know, and then not many people take into consideration that he's playing on the worst damn team in the league, you know, and they just expect you to elevate it like immediately, like right away, day one. And, you know, for me in Cleveland, you know, Bernie Kosar set the bar really high for Cleveland quarterbacks with the old Browns. And, you know, the fans just thought we were going to pick up where the old Browns left off. And I'm like, no, this is, you know, we're an expansion team, man. We got, you know, rookies. We got a first-year head coach. Never been a head coach in the league before. You know, my best receiver was a rookie drafted in the same class as me. So, you know, we're just young guys trying to make it. And, but it was, it got overwhelming because you do feel the pressure, you know, as a number one, you know, from the media, the fans, hell, your own teammates, you know, in the locker room, they look at you like, you know, you're the first pick in the draft. You're supposed to, you know, make a difference. You're supposed to bring us, you know, take us where we want to go. But, you know, just it takes time. And, you know, you just got to you have to have an unwavering confidence and belief in yourself that I don't care how tough this gets. Nothing's going to tell me that I can't be a great player in this league. Like you just, you know, and because you're going to have the media is going to be busting you. They're going to be saying, oh, he's a bust. He can't do this, can't do that. You're going to hear everything. Fans are going to boo you. They're going to do everything. But you can't fold under it, you know. It's easier said than done, but you have to be really mentally tough to get through those situations. And then, you know, my fourth year there, we ended up making the playoffs. So, you know, we came a long
way.
Yeah, and it was the only time the Browns had made the playoffs in 20 years until last year.
Didn't it feel like the Super Bowl? I mean, it's your Super Bowl. It's your Super Bowl, right? I remember that. We got, you know, to the first round of the playoffs. We got won our first game. I remember thinking, holy shit, after losing so much, it just felt so gratifying.
Oh, it did, man. Absolutely. But for me, you know, it was one of those things, kind of how my NFL career went. Like, I had so many injuries. And, you know, we got through that season. It was the only season I made it through start to finish completely healthy. And then we made it to the playoffs. But the last game of the season, we're playing the Atlanta Falcons at home. And we got to win the game to get in. We win, we're in. So in about the third quarter, I break my leg. We're up 14-7 or whatever. Guy tackles me, leg snaps, can't play in the playoff game. So I'm like, I started with this franchise from day one, getting the hell beat out of me. Now I got to sit on the sideline on crutches watching them play the playoff game against the Steelers. I mean, that was a brutal day.
I
mean,
I can imagine.
Playing well and stuff. And you're just standing up there like, man, I'm supposed to be out on that field right now. And it's just, that was the worst injury, just having to sit and watch that playoff game.
I remember your first year. It was like,
set,
hike. Oh, God. I mean, it was, you couldn't even hit a slip. I mean, you were just getting pounded, and people said, he is such a tough kid because you were just getting brutalized. And to that end, you suffered so many injuries. You got so hurt. 5 years, and you basically can't play anymore. You're just torn apart. What's that do? You're this potential unfulfilled, and you had some comeback attempts. Your body just wouldn't work, and then suddenly 5 years, you're out of the game. You're out of the sports. Everything that is your identity, everything you've worked and strived for, that had to be such a difficult time. How did you deal with that? It had to be so hard on your body before, and now your ego and your mind. How'd you deal with that?
Not well, to be honest with you. I didn't deal with it very well at all. I think every athlete at the end of their career transitioning to I'm not a professional athlete anymore is just a very weird place. And it hits guys, you know, differently. Some guys take it really hard. Other guys make the transition a little easier. For me, you know, like you said, Josh, you know, I fully expected to – hell, I thought I'd be playing to this day. You know, honestly, I thought I'd play for a long, long time. And I thought, you know, at minimum, I was going to play 15 years. You know, at least I was going to play 15. You know, but then you get there, the injuries pile up. I had two major shoulder surgeries that reconstructed my whole shoulder, got healthy from that, tore it again. Another shoulder strain. Got a broken leg, broken ankle. I got four screws in my thumb. I've got a fused, my back is fused together. L3, L4, 5 is fused together. Multiple concussions, you know, just countless injuries, man. And it just piles up. And, you know, the shoulder surgeries are why I couldn't play anymore. After the first surgery, I came back. When I left Cleveland, I went to Green Bay. I played with the Packers for a year. So I got, I got hurt in training camp, but I got accredited there. So I ended up getting 6 years in credited in the league. But, you know, after I had the first surgery, I made a comeback. I was going to go to Indianapolis and just kind of as a year transition, I was going to be Peyton's backup. And they wanted me to come in for a workout. The workout went great. And I was having a little shoulder pain, but I thought, you know, it's just from the surgery, you know, just a little soreness, whatever. And they're like, we just want to get an MRI on your shoulder to see how it is structurally in there before we sign you for the season. And they did an MRI, found a tear in my shoulder. I'm on the operating table again. And then, so after the second surgery, I ended up in Jacksonville, but I was just never the same, man. It was so frustrating. And Rex, I don't know if you've ever had the injury that took you to the point where you just, you felt like you, but you couldn't do you, you know, like, I would drop back a pass and I would be like, boom, there's a throw I make routinely. It's a tight throw. It's a tight window, but I can fit that in there. I just couldn't fit it in there anymore. The ball just didn't have the step on it, didn't have the velocity. And then that's when I knew that.
And you feel like I did the same. I'd beat my man and one dribble dunk it. And all of a sudden I'd beat my man and catch up and foul me or catch up and swipe it away. And it almost feels like your superpower is gone.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's the craziest feeling, man. But Josh, getting back to your question about handling, you know, that transition after I was done. I've never really talked about this publicly before, but I fell into like a really deep depression where I didn't even leave the house for a couple of years, man. Like I was just miserable. I was on painkillers and rehab every damn day in my shoulder and, you know, everything, just trying to get healthy again, man. And I was just like stuck in the house. I was playing video games. I didn't want to be seen because every time I walked out of the house, everybody was like, you know, when you coming back? What's happening? You know, why aren't you playing? This, that, and the other. And it was just like torture to me, man. And so I was kind of like hit out for a couple of years. And then the best thing that happened to me was my son was born right around that time. And I, you know, right about the time I feel like I have no purpose in life. Like my whole life was being a football player. Yeah. And then I'm like, who the hell am I now? I'm sitting here on the couch playing video games, don't want to go anywhere. And then when my son was born, I felt like I had a purpose. I'm like, all right, okay, I'm dad. Now I'm dad. So and so that really kind of snapped me out of it and got me going and, you know, got me back out and doing things and, you know, being social again and that kind of stuff. But there were a couple of years there, man, where it was a tough deal.
People don't realize, and I certainly didn't realize, I was much like you. The problem was that I, you know, kept taking the painkillers and couldn't snap out of it. And, you know, that just kind of became a way of life. That you were able to, you know, go through all of that and, you know, come out of it at a young age. I mean, you're in your 20s, still in your 20s at this point. So, you know, and the other thing I would argue too is you, I'm correct here, aren't I? You get the same CTE at college that you get in the pros, right? You have the same. So I would argue that you played 9 years professionally.
Right.
You know, because you're going out there and look, I just don't, people don't understand the wear and tear on the human body that being a professional athlete, it just puts you through. The human body's not meant to run up and down a basketball floor for 30, you know, 15 years after college or high school even.
Right.
Football, especially, you know, if you go and you play in college for you red shirt and you play for 4 more years, you are beat the hell up.
Absolutely.
No pension. You got no pension. You got no benefits, you know. So I just can't. I don't know how you guys aren't hurt on every play. So just kudos to you for playing the most brutal of sports.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. It was, you know, back then, you know, that was kind of the last era of quarterbacks where they'd let them hit the shit out of us. You know, now you can't touch quarterbacks.
Yeah.
You know, you can't even like land on them when you tackle them.
Yeah.
You can't hit them low. You can't do anything. So back then they were just blasting us, man. I mean,
and they had to, like, it was like their job to make it look as vicious as it could look. Absolutely. Right? And land, full body weight land on you.
Oh, yeah. That was the worst. You know,
it's trying to knock you out. It's trying to knock you out of the game.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you got a 300 and some pound guy hitting you when his comes down on you. I mean, it's like the life leaves you. I mean, your breath goes out, and it's just like, I mean, you do that over and over and over throughout a game and a season and five seasons, six seasons. I mean, it gets brutal.
And it's a 300-pound guy who's an incredible athlete his entire life to hit you as hard as he can and to get as much speed as he can in 8 yards and kill you. And, I mean, those guys are 300 and run a 4.8.
You know, it's crazy, Josh. Like I thought that was the biggest difference for me, like making the transition from college to the NFL. Like in college, you know, I wasn't like the fastest guy, but I could get away from defensive linemen in college. In NFL, those guys will run you down. Those like 300-pound guys talking about, you're like, oh, I can beat him around the corner. Next thing you know, he's pulling your ass down from behind, and you're like, oh my god, this guy.
Damn.
Like, it's crazy how athletic these dudes are and how big. No, I mean, I'm 6'5", 240 myself. I mean, I'm a big dude. I look small out there compared to those guys. I mean, they're like massive human beings that can run, man, and they're so strong and athletic. It's just it's an incredible sport, and it's just, you know, I watch it now. I'm like, how the hell did I play that?
Yeah,
it's crazy, man.
Like, did you have a like training camp or a moment where you were like, because they all say that it's the speed of the game changes in the NFL. You know, did you have a moment where you're like, oh shit, this is different? Like a moment you remember?
Yeah, I think it was probably my first week or so of training camp. Actually, you know, when we first get there, they have a rookie camp for the rookie guys, and you know, just like a 3-day little mini camp kind of thing. And at that point, I was like, oh, this is no different than college, you know, but I didn't realize it was just the damn rookies out there that you're going against. So after the rookie minicamp, here come the veterans. I get out there for the first couple of days with the vets, man, and I'm like, God, you got to let go of the ball early, man. Like, you got to anticipate these throws because the windows, you know, in college, you know, if this is open in college, this is open in the NFL. Man. You know, and you're standing there and your coach is like, why don't you throw it to him? I'm like, he's not open. He's like, yeah, he is. His left shoulder is open. So if the guy's in his right shoulder, you got to be able to throw that damn thing to his left shoulder in a window this thick 30 yards away. And that's the NFL, man. It's like you just have to be just so pinpoint accurate and anticipate the throw so much more. So that was the biggest adjustment I had to have. So the DBs, man, they close on the ball so quickly. It's just phenomenal.
Tim, we've kept you a long time. I want to get a couple. We got the Super Bowl this week. Is Joe Burrow the first LSU Tiger you're actually rooting for? And even though he beat your passing record, and now that Matthew Stafford's in the Super Bowl, how do you look back on his time with the Lions?
Yeah, you know, it's a great matchup. I'm really excited about it. And you know, Stafford, I've been a Matthew Stafford fan for a long time. He's just been buried in Detroit. Nobody knew how great he was, but that guy's put up numbers year in and year out that, you know, are as good as anybody in the league. He's a phenomenal player. I'm really happy for him that he gets in a situation now where he can flourish and take off and show the people that, you know, didn't really know a whole lot about Matthew Stafford, what kind of player he actually is. Because, man, he's phenomenal. He's got the right coach around him. He's got talent around him. And they're playing at home. They're going to be really tough to beat. But I'm a big Joe Burrow fan. You know, like I said, even though he broke my records that lasted for 20-some years in the SEC, you know, he's got something about him. He's got a little magic, a little mojo to him it almost reminds you of like that Joe Montana feel. You remember Rex
Tucker? Yes, sir.
It was just like, no matter how big the moment was, Joe looked like he was just sitting on the beach drinking a margarita or something. You know, he was just so chill. And Burrow has that kind of attitude about him as well. And, you know, it'll be tough. You know, the Rams can get after the quarterback, obviously, with Aaron Donald and Von Miller and those guys. And the Bengals have struggled up front on the offensive line. But Burrow has to find a place to make plays, man. He's got a lot of weapons on the outside. So it'll be a heck of a matchup. I'm really looking forward to watching.
That Joe Burrow, talking about him, he's so enigmatic. He's got it, whatever it is, whether it be for a player, a movie star, or whatever. Some people just have it. And he obviously does. It's like the people you talk to, if they're a Rams fan, they're for the Rams, or a Bengals fan, the Bengals. But if they don't really know, they're like, I'm for Joe Burrow. Like people just love his swagger and whatnot. But it's interesting, like if he wins this thing, just the way our society is, it's going to start tearing him down, that process. You know, not then people are going to make a decision not to like Joe Burrow, you know, because that's the way we are. I hope he wins this thing and is on top of the world for a little while before people start to poke and try and prod holes into him and not like his stuff, because I've never seen a guy so universally just liked from afar. Plus the Bengals, people, nobody's threatened by the Bengals. They're like happy for the Cincinnati. They got Monday off no matter what. The kids from school, you know, Cincinnati would go crazy if they won the Super Bowl. And LA would be like, yeah, cool, we won. That's sweet. I mean, so you gotta, there's a part of that. But when did you recognize Joe Burrow had it off the field too? Like he had, when did you see like, whoa, different?
Yeah, you know, I think when he transferred from Ohio State and he went to LSU, and just the way he kind of just like took over that program and was like became the guy so quickly there, I think was just very impressive. And you just watch him play and just like game after game after game, the consistency was just off the charts, man. He was he's just a cool guy back there. He understands the position. He plays the game the right way. He's a fantastic leader. You can see guys respond to him and they believe in him. They trust him. You know, he has everything. You know, for me, playing the quarterback position is about the intangibles. You know, at that level, everybody can throw it hard. Everybody has size. You know, everybody can, you know, everybody has the obvious skill sets, but the little intangibles are what make you a great player. You know, the leadership, the toughness, you know, the understanding of the systems, you know, just all that kind of stuff. Will guys rally around you? Will guys believe in you? Is what it's really about at that position. And obviously he's got that, you know, those guys really believe in him and they've got their guy. So he's been fun to watch, been great to watch him, you know, throughout his college career and now his NFL career. And, you know, I just feel bad he's in the Browns division, man. My Browns are going to have a tough time beating that guy. It's you know, they're going to be good for a long time.
There might be the best quarterback play in the NFL ever right now. So much talent, so much young talent. Any other young quarterbacks that you got your eye on that you really like, this guy's got it?
Let's see. I'm trying to think. You know, I thought Baker was off to a great start in Cleveland, Baker Mayfield. You know, this year he took a step back. You know, but last year, man, he really took off and had the team in the playoffs. They beat the Steelers in a playoff game. I thought he was really on the right track and doing things well. Lamar Jackson is incredibly fun to watch. I mean, his athleticism is just, it's never been, you know, maybe Michael Vick, but, you know. But
same age as Joe Burrow, which is crazy, isn't that?
It's crazy.
Like they're the same age. He's a young quarterback.
I mean, the guy's
league for so long.
Yeah, I mean, it's great talent throughout the league right now. This Justin Herbert kid for the Chargers is a really good player. You know, just it's like Patrick Mahomes. It's fun to watch. He can flat out play. So there's a lot of talent in the league at that position right now. It's in great hands.
One of my favorite things that I've heard Joe Burrow say, I guess he was a good athlete growing up and played basketball and whatnot. And somebody asked him how good he was in basketball. He said, if I'd have played basketball, I'd average 15 or 16 in the league, which I love it.
I mean, he probably really feels
maybe he would. Maybe he would.
You never know. Never know.
What's your favorite movie, Tim?
Ooh, favorite movie, man. God, that's a good one. Probably my favorite movie growing up was a movie called Johnny Be Good. I don't know if you guys have ever seen that movie. You remember that he was a high school quarterback?
Anthony Michael Hall.
Yeah, I think it was one of his first movies. But I'm a big Denzel Washington fan as well. So I love Denzel's movies, man. Anything he makes, I'm watching that for sure. So yeah, I like Denzel a lot.
I did a movie with Anthony Michael Hall and we came to the read through and he goes, I'm Michael. I was like, you're Anthony Michael Hall. What if you could have dinner with anybody, alive or dead, Tim? Who would you sit down with?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Probably, I would say probably Michael Jordan would be. You know, obviously huge Michael Jordan fan growing up, big inspiration. But Jordan would probably be up there. I met him a couple times. You know, I got a chance to meet him and hang out with him a couple times, but never just like sit down and like have a long conversation over dinner or anything like that. So he would be cool to talk to, man. Just so many stories and, you know, that kind of stuff. Just talking to, you know, the greatest athlete, in my opinion, of all time would be a pretty cool deal.
Did you ever see the time Rex set that up? Rex put 39 on him.
I actually watched that video. That was awesome. That was awesome.
Yeah. He only got about 12 of them.
Front row center for any concert, dead or alive, too.
Ooh. I'm a country music fan for the most part.
Okay.
I kind of seen my favorite guys. You know, I mean, Chris Stapleton, you know, a Kentucky guy, is fun to watch the concert.
Yeah.
He is super, super talented. I went and saw Morgan Wallen when he was at Rupp Arena a couple months ago. He was really good. But yeah, I don't know. I don't really know who would be my ultimate concert. Just I like all music, honestly, man. I mean,
right.
I'm doing it at the time.
So. Good. Tim, thanks, buddy.
I got one more thing. I have to ask you. Him. You're chubby. And you've let yourself go. So people who are just listening, wow, that is not right. He's just every time I see you, I walk away. I like shake your hand. I'm like, geez, Al, he's a strong fella. What is a Tim Couch, real quick, a Tim Couch workout week and nutrition look like? Real quick.
Well, it's every day. You know, I'm probably weights about 5 days a week and cardio. A couple of days a week, but you know, the diet is just, I mean, it's pretty basic. You know, the morning is like egg whites, oatmeal, some fruit, then a protein shake, a couple protein shakes during the day. Lunch will be, you know, grilled chicken, sweet potatoes, brown rice, stuff like that. Dinners, you know, maybe a steak or some, you know, salmon, whatever, something like that with some, you know, broccoli, spinach. Just, I mean, it's a pretty boring diet. I'd always been really into health and fitness, but you know, once I got out of, when I got done playing, it's like we talked about earlier, like, I don't know what I'm going to do to kind of fulfill this competitive edge, because I have a really addictive personality, and that could go, you know, either way. You know, if you get it going down the wrong road, you get to, you know, into some really bad stuff. And I'm like, well, I'm going to get addicted to health and fitness, man. I'm just going to like go down, try, you know, because I know it's good for me. I'm going to try and do that. So I got like addicted to the point where I'm like, you know, in the gym, like I haven't missed a workout in 20 years, man. You know, just like I'm always in there. I'm always doing something. Even on days I don't feel like it, I'll just go do a light workout or do some cardio, do something. My goal is to try and break a sweat every day. You know, it's not always like the most intense workout, but it's just, I just want to move my body, you know, just whether it's go for a walk or, you know, do something, you know, just because if I sit around all these injuries, you know, Rex, how it feels like I just feel so tight, so stiff, and just, I just don't feel good if I just sit around. So I have to be active and keep moving.
Sure. Well, yeah. Every time I see you out somewhere, I always make an effort to go see you because A, you're Tim Couch, and B, you'll always say, hi, Josh. And I don't want anyone with me to be like, do you see Tim Couch? Say hi, knows me. And if I'm with my girlfriend, I'm like, we're going this way. No, we're not going over there by that guy, that genetic perfect guy.
Where
I'm like, got a little beer belly over here. So it's good to know. It's good to know your plan. I got to go with some more egg whites.
Oh, goodness. Tim, thanks, buddy. Thanks. Come back and do this another time.
I'd love to, man. I really enjoyed talking to you guys. I appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
Huge thrill for me, both of you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Josh. Appreciate it, bud.
Much love, homeboy.
I feel like I'm the luckiest Kentucky fan in the world right now. I mean, that was great. What a great guy. What an honest guy.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about the tough times, and that's so important to hear for everyone, because we all put you guys on this pedestal, and you're human beings, and, you know, there's good times and bad times, and to hear he had those times and how he coped with it and how his son being born really snapped him back into life. And that's kind of a beautiful thing to hear.
You know, I think that one of the overriding themes of recently is just, hey, we've had on Fergie Jenkins, who's in his 70s. We've had on Rod Carew, who's in his 70s, talk to us about personal things and struggles that they've had in life. And Tim Couch, a guy who's 40-ish, now talking about depression and things that we never heard any grown-up talk about ever, is becoming more acceptable and more commonplace, and I'm here for it.
Yeah, well, it's something, you know, at least on here, we've been very honest about. You and I both dealt with depression and just mental health issues.
Yep.
You know, life is so, it's hard. So I love to hear other people chip in. I love to hear that the honesty so people aren't trying to be so macho.
Right.
Like, I can just get up, just do it. No, it's a, it's refreshing. It's nice to see society starting to understand and accept it.
Yeah, with you. All right. That was episode 33 with Tim Couch. We'll be back next week. Episode 34 here on the Rex Chapman Show with super cool Josh Hopkins, powered by basketballnews.com.